we'll definitely talk more about that. But I've got a great idea for you on that event.
All right.
You need to combine that with the health coach. Mm-hmm. And then she can do...
She can pick the menu.
She can say, okay, so we talk about your financial health.
Yeah.
I'm, track with me on this. All right. Mike Ivey and his financial health picture for you. And then your body health.
There you go.
Oh, dynamic duo.
The problem is most of the stuff on that menu, she'd go, well, you know, that's got a lot of saturated fat in that.
Depends on what kind of fat. I'm not against fat. It's good fat.
Yeah. No. We have healthy choices usually.
Mike, he's always serving whey protein at those deals.
Whey
for
protein.
Real? No, whey.
For real?
Grass fed.
Usually there's a bone broth or chicken, and then there's usually a fish option most places that's what they give you.
Yeah.
But anyway.
Well, see, last year, now correct me if I'm wrong, but let's see, weren't we last year at Harrigan's?
No, last year I did at the Double Nickel.
Double Nickel, okay.
Yeah.
I was going to say, no, we looked at Harrigan's. That's what it was.
Maybe so.
But they're out of business now. You knew that, right?
I've done it at Rain Uptown, Overton,
yeah.
Double Nickel. Where else have I done
Where's
it?
Where's your favorite?
Overton was really cool.
Overton was a good venue, but it was kind of buffet style. The food last year was good, but they irritated me because they wanted to charge. They not wanted. They did charge me for the screen that I used. I could have gone to the office and got my own screen. And they
for your PowerPoint?
Me, yeah, yeah. They charged me $85 for the
oh
screen. I could have went and bought one for $90 down at Office Max. Really, we're gonna spend a fair amount of money here and. That thing was in the closet up until 10 minutes ago. It wasn't like I was taking it away from anybody else. So that really, really rubbed me wrong. So I won't do that again.
Yeah, nice.
So I'll be
that was classic.
I'll be finding a venue shortly.
Oh,
so if you have any suggestions for where the venue might be, let me know.
I just think, though, if we do the dual health coach, financial health portfolio piece all together. Because look, you can have all the wealth in the world, but if you don't have your health, what good is it to you? Right, Mike Ivey? They both go hand in glove.
I agree.
There's a
health
saying,
and wealth, buddy.
There's a saying that man would get every dollar that he has a man will spend all of his health trying to achieve wealth, and then in his later years he will spend all of his wealth trying to buy back his health.
Very good
statement, Mike Ivey. Master Shifu over there.
Write that down.
Good morning. Welcome to the show.
Just hear you say the Harrigan's, the restaurant.
Yeah.
Is out of business?
Uh-huh.
Wow.
Yeah, I think they went out about 3 or 4 weeks ago, something like that. I've heard that maybe they'll come back at another location. I don't know where. But, yeah, that headset will crank up in that microphone. Yeah. but that's what I understand. Someone else out there may know something I don't, but that's what
they've
I know it at
so
this
long.
Point.
They've been around.
Oh, it was around forever. Lubbock legend Harrigan's been there forever.
Wasn't
at the Memphis
a local Lubbockite fellow, a tech graduate or something that started Harrigan's?
Yeah, don't get me to line on the history because it's really before my time. I mean, that thing has been around for kind of like the way Gardsky's went, you know. Gardsky's went out and then they tried to put a Holy Cow Beef, tried to go in there and call it Holy Cow Gardsky's or something. But they got into
a
lot
good,
of trouble with remodeling on that building, and it was the money was just eating them alive. They were going to make, and Melody would love this. And we used to advertise for them, and they're good people, Weldon and those folks at Holy Cow Beef. But they tried to go in there and make it, you know, a lot of it organic beef and stuff, which I thought would have been cool, you know, hamburgers and all that. But it wasn't because of it. Just they got into it and realized that. You know, here's a house built literally back in the 20s that was converted into a restaurant. And over time, as modifications were made, then you go back and then, okay, well, then they went in and said, well, we want to remodel and redo this whole kitchen to fit our business model. So they start tearing out and start doing all this stuff, and Codes comes in and goes, hey, you know what? You can't do that. You cannot do all this stuff, you know, and make it work. The code doesn't. And so Codes really killed that deal, City Codes. Just saying, it's what happened. Huh. Anyway, interesting. Just a little side information there on what happened. But anyway, so Gardsky's goes down, Harrigan's goes down, Texas Land and Cattle goes down. There's a lot of them. I told you, this restaurant thing, like we talked about earlier in the show.
I wouldn't want to be in the restaurant.
Oh, no way, man. It's just no way.
It's a tough deal.
The profit margin on it is so slim to none. It's just, could you imagine? I mean, you talk about laying awake at night and sweating it.
Yeah.
And in the top 30 restaurant market where the labor participation rate is less than 3%.
Overhead,
man.
My gosh, to get, you know, where everything's growing is to Southwest Lubbock. You look at what just dirt costs out there now.
Oh, your rents and stuff. Yeah. I talked to one lady who we've advertised before, and we were going to do some this year, but she's moving. She's moving out of the South Plains Mall, and she goes, well, wait a minute. I don't want to advertise this yet. Let's do it in the spring when I get to my new location. And I asked her why, and she said, well, because the rents are just killing me. In the mall, she goes, just went through a new remodel,
right, yeah,
at South Plains Mall, but the rents are jacked to the moon, and she goes, I can't compete with that. So it rents and all this. So yes, Mike Ivey, inflation is here. All right. I'm just going to say it, right. Mike. You like to always say at the end of the show,
investments and advisory services are offered through registered representatives of Lincoln Financial Securities Corporation. Lincoln Financial Securities Corporation and RFS Financial Services are not affiliated.
Okay. Hey, I'll see you back here next Monday on the show.
See you then.
And stick around now. Dr. Ben Edwards, MD, coming up next. We'll be talking about that other side of it, your health and wealth, right here on AM 580 with You're the Cure, Mike Ivey. Maybe. On your portfolio, anyway. Yeah. Stick around. We'll be back with more.
Can a commercial roof also be an investment? It can if it's a spray foam roof by Adams Roof Tech. Texas A&M did a case study on their 7 million square feet of spray foam roofs, and they found that their spray foam roofs paid for themselves in just 4.5 years in energy savings. Any commercial roof system can keep the water out, but only a spray foam roof by Adams Roof Tech can also pay for itself in reduced energy bills. Adams Roof Tech is one of the largest volume spray foam roofing contractors in West Texas. Put our 47 years and 33 million square feet of commercial roof installation experience to work for you on your building. With guarantees up to 25 years, installed by a company with a history of installing commercial roofs that last 3 decades. A spray foam roof by Adams Roof Tech is the safe choice. For a free estimate, call 928-6062 or see our credentials at lubbockfoam.com. Again, that's 928-6062 or see lubbockfoam.com.
Foster kids in our area need dedicated volunteer advocates to speak up on their behalf.
That's why Coach and I teamed up with CASA last year to recruit people like you to serve the growing number of abused and neglected children in foster care. Join our team today, by yourself or with a partner. Make a positive difference in the life of a child as a CASA volunteer.
Be the voice of hope for a child in foster care. Become a volunteer with CASA.
Learn more at youarethevoice.org.
Listen to your body. It may be telling you it's missing something. When we're missing omega-3s, we can feel run down, stiff, achy, or have a hard time focusing and handling stress. Omega-3s are vastly deficient in the American food supply, and we can't achieve optimal health without them. Nordic Naturals fish oils provide a convenient way to get the omega-3s you need and deliver industry-leading purity, freshness, and taste. Visit Natural Health Market at 4414 82nd Street in the Village Shopping Center.
Are you experiencing low back pain, neck pain, headaches, or pain as a result of an injury? Then let me introduce you to my chiropractor, Dr. Carla Haddock. Dr. Haddock has been practicing chiropractic care for many years, specializing in diversified treatment, drop table, cold laser therapy, and acupuncture. No expensive treatment plans, and your initial exam is free. If you're looking to improve your health and experience a pain-free lifestyle, then call Dr. Haddock at 239-7190. That's 239-7190. Call for your free initial exam today. Haddock Chiropractic is a proud sponsor of the morning health show, You're the Cure, with Dr. Ben Edwards, MD, every Monday morning from 9 a.m. to 10 a.m. right here on AM 580 Radio, Haddock Chiropractic, 239-7190.
We're visiting with Dr. Flippin with Exodus New Beginnings. You can always check out the website, exodusnb.com. Go there, check it out. Dr. Flippin, glad to have you on the show today. Tell us a little bit about supportive cancer care.
Well, basically, we just support the patient's immune system, and we do this with several different modalities. We use oxygen in the form of O3. So instead of two molecules of oxygen, we electrically force another molecule in. That's a potent anti-inflammatory. It also causes the patient to secrete tumor necrosis factor. Mm-hmm. So that helps kill the cancer cells. We also use high-dose vitamin C, which is a potent antioxidant, and also it has some anti-cancer properties. And then finally, we use high-dose vitamin B, different vitamin Bs, and those support the patient's immune system so that basically what happens is the patient's own immune system can fight the cancer a lot better.
And this is done intravenously, right?
Right.
Okay, and so the patient comes in, relaxed atmosphere, gets a full rundown of what's going to happen. Of course, there's some diagnosis that goes on in the first phase of this, but fully understanding, you know, what's going on, and then treatment takes place after that, right?
That's correct.
It's very, very interesting, and had a lot of success with this, I hear.
Yes, very, very successful. We have a patient that has stage 4 pancreatic cancer, expected to live 6 weeks, diagnosed in November, who's still going to work every day and feeling great.
Be sure to visit the new location at 7711 Woodrow Road. That's 7711 Woodrow Road, or call 863-3903. That's 863-3903. You can always visit the website, exodusnb.com.
Vitamins Plus is a full-line health food store located inside Drug Emporium on the corner of 82nd Slide Road. Right now, we have a very large selection of natural cold, flu, and allergy remedies. It's that time of year to build up your immunity to help you fight off this year's bugs. If we don't have it in stock, what you're looking for, then we can special order it. Texas owned and operated for over 20 years. Good for you groceries at great for you prices. That's Vitamins Plus inside Drug Emporium, 82nd and Slide Road. Get by and see us today. Welcome into You're the Cure right here on AM 580 with Dr. Ben Edwards, MD. Of course, You're the Cure, brought to you also by Veritas Medical here in Lubbock. Check out the website, veritasmedical.com. Our telephone number at our practice, 8556-VERITAS. That's 8556-VERITAS. And let me say good morning once again to Dr. Ben Edwards. Good morning, sir. How are you?
Good morning, Wade. I'm fine. How are you?
I'm doing great. It's been a while. I wasn't here last Monday. You did the show, I think, with Jim. But we caught last week. I was talking about you earlier in the show about our great program that we had with the organic farming and that we talked about 2 weeks ago on the show, which was fantastic.
And I have a question about that.
Oh, you do already?
Go right ahead, Miss Melanie.
Miss Melody Wilkes, health coach here.
Okay, so I don't think it was last time's guest, but the time before. I'll just ignore you.
Don't
talk to Dr. Edwards.
Last week we had Ty Bollinger from The Truth About Cancer. The week before we had
No. This
Polyface
was the
Farms.
Polyface
first
Farms.
One.
Yeah, I couldn't remember the name.
Which was Joel Salatin, and then before that was Don Huber, professor emeritus from Purdue.
It was him.
Who's done all the
it
research on
okay.
glyphosate and GMO.
Oh,
he
good.
Had said something about how when you spray the glyphosate, it not just gets on the leaves, but it gets down into the root, and then the plant takes it up. So, you know the rule, the clean 15 and the dirty...
Dozen.
Right. So, I had been... making our food purchases based on, you know, well, if it's an avocado or a banana or an orange, it doesn't necessarily have to be organic. But right. after hearing that, Now I'm wondering, well, if it's getting into the root, that's even bypassing the peel, so.
Right. Well, and the Clean 15 and Dirty Dozen is what Melody's talking about, and that's a list of foods that the Environmental Working Group puts out, and basically it's designed for people who maybe don't have the budget to afford organic food across the board, 100% organic. So there's certain foods that have a higher quantity of glyphosate in them, and so you want to be sure to at least spend your dollars on those foods as organic.
Okay, that makes sense.
So the bottom 15, the clean 15, these are the foods that tend to have less glyphosate just because it's not sprayed on that crop. Like avocados aren't sprayed with glyphosate. Now, glyphosate is in 70% of the rainwater, we found out recently. It's just in our environment. The soil retains it. So the other food products can have it, but that the Clean 15 tend to not have much or any. So on those, yeah, I think it is okay. Now, if you're dealing with a chronic health condition, you might want to be more vigilant on trying to eat 100% organic. But most of us live in the real world, and the reality is we can't always afford organic all the time. In some cases, it's not necessary at all. But I did want to point out, I found this on foodbabe.com, and it was a list of foods and the amount of glyphosate that was found in that food. It was kind of like a top 10 list.
Yeah.
Let me pull that up. You'd be shocked at what the number one, I think it was Cheerios, Honey Nut, or regular. I'll look it up.
We used to eat that. We haven't in quite a while.
Well, and what's considered safe, quote unquote, by the FDA and the EPA is 20 parts per million. But studies show that 1/10 of 1 part per million of the glyphosate can kill gut bacteria. And as we've learned about on our show, the gut bacteria are absolutely essential to our health. It turns out that 15% of the microDNA, which microDNA is the genetic material that's the on-off switches for our DNA. It turns certain genes on, turns certain genes off. 15% of that genetic switch, microRNA, is bacterial microRNA from your gut. So if you're killing your gut flora, you're impacting your DNA and the on-off switches. So here we go, foodbabe.com. I just Googled glyphosate in food products on Foodbabe. Cheerios, the original Cheerios, not the Honey Nut, 1,125.3 parts per billion of glyphosate. Honey Nut is 670 parts per billion. Wheaties, 31.2. It just goes and tricks.
That's all the cereals.
Yeah.
That's outrageous.
But then those gluten-free bunny cookies, cocoa and vanilla from Annie's. You know, people think is the healthier version of stuff. 55.13 parts per billion of the glyphosate.
My goodness.
In the top 10 list, Corn Flakes, Raisin Bran, Kashi, Special K, Frosted Flakes, Cheez-Its.
So now, is this like their bars, or is this just their cereals, or everything?
It just says Organic Promise. I'm not sure what that is.
That's a cereal.
That's 24.9 parts per billion.
Wow.
But Ritz Crackers, 270 parts per billion. Triscuits, Oreos. You just keep going right down the list. But number one, all of these are packaged foods, mostly grain products, Goldfish, Fritos, Doritos, Lay's, Stacy's, Simply Naked pita chips. There's 812 parts per billion on the Stacy's.
I wonder how much glyphosate I get in this.
Well, we could test that. Skoll Original or
Skoll Original Fine Green? Cut.
Okay.
And I have it in my mouth literally like 8 hours a day.
Well, and the reason we're going so, I'm looking so hard at the glyphosate is because the mechanism of action, which we learned about from Dr. Huber, you know, what it does in our body, the way it damages us, number one is the antibiotic. It is an antibiotic. It kills bacteria. It kills our gut bacteria. It kills the bacteria in the soil. And when you start killing bacteria, there's just this downstream effect that, you know, is too vast to even comprehend.
Yeah.
When our gut bacteria interacts with our DNA and our immune system cells turns things on and off in our DNA. I mean, that's huge. So just that alone, just the fact that it kills bacteria is a big deal. But then it chelates the minerals. We had a patient last week. She's been with us for, probably close to 2 years. I forget her original complaints, but she was still suffering from fatigue and some brain fog and some loss of hair, low sleep issues, insomnia, mood instability. So in a lot of the areas she got better, but these were lingering things. And then she did a hair tissue mineral analysis, which basically you're looking at the minerals in the hair, and that correlates with your tissue levels of minerals.
Okay.
What's in your bloodstream is not always consistent or accurate with what's inside your cell or what's in your tissue. You know, think of the bloodstream as the interstate highway. Things are traveling up and down that highway. But what's actually in an office building or in a home, you know, that's different. You know, what's on a highway versus what's in a structure.
Sure.
So inside a cell, your magnesium levels could be totally different than what's in the bloodstream. And in fact, 90% of your magnesium is inside the cell. So what I'm saying is you can go to your doctor and ask for a blood test, but that's a serum magnesium or a serum potassium or a serum, and that's different than what's in the cell. So this patient did a tissue hair sample. So basically you get a clump of hair and cut it off and send it in, and they analyzed her to be quite deficient in magnesium and potassium and a few other things. So she did a protocol to remineralize herself, and we do with all our patients, we do kind of a broad-based generic remineralization with Fulvic, which is a mineral product that has all the minerals, the 74 different minerals your body needs, from the big minerals like magnesium to the tiny, tiny minerals we call micro and trace minerals like boron. So Fulvic has all of it in a blend, but what she needed was something more concentrated and a lot more magnesium for a time period to get her back in balance. But the point I'm getting to is when she did this, when she remineralized herself, it resolved every symptom she had.
Wow.
I mean, her sleep got better, her mood, her energy, everything improved to the point that she was so excited she couldn't wait to get back in the clinic and tell us. In fact, she emailed and called and was so excited. And she's taking an online course now in this remineralization protocol because it so transformed her life. And I'm telling you that story just to point out the fact that glyphosate chelates the minerals. And what that means is it binds the minerals up to make them non-usable. The plant can't use them. The human body can't use them. So it's a chelator of minerals. So it kills bacteria. It chelates your minerals. And then it punches hole through your gut wall.
So let me ask you this then. Glyphosate, again, the Roundup stuff, and actually this question came up on the show an hour ago, and I was kind of talking about it, but I think, so would it be safe to say that the average American out there is really, really
toxic,
lacking in the minerals?
Yes,
because
absolutely.
Even if... You know, because the minerals, again, are just being ravaged by all these free radicals.
Right.
The glyphosate, the stuff into the toxins in the environment. So, and you compound the fact that a lot of things that we eat are mineral lacking, too. Is that correct?
Yes. Oh, yeah. The USDA has put out multiple statistics that look at the mineral concentration of food produced today compared to food produced in the mid of the last century, 1950, 1960s, even 1970s. And across the board, the minerals have been depleted substantially. There's a graph I always put up in my talks that shows the mineral content of the soil in the early 1900s. And then as mechanized farming, commercialized man-made fertilizer, and then the glyphosate in particular, the mineral levels in the soil just drop, substantially to the point of almost undetectable. So I always talk about it, how it takes 47 bowls of spinach today, or actually in 1997, today it's probably 57 bowls of spinach today, to get the iron content you would have gotten from one bowl of spinach in 1950.
Okay, now
even
right
if
there,
it's organic,
yes, even organic's gonna have more, but it's still
woefully
severely
inadequate.
Depleted. Our topsoil, Dr. Huber talked about this, and I think Joel Salatin did also, how the topsoil is just totally decimated. And if you don't have topsoil, then you don't have the bugs, you don't have the bugs, you don't have the minerals.
Okay, so the question becomes, Doctor, should people out there, because the question an hour ago was, should you spend the money on the organic side of things as opposed to the, you know, in fact, spinach was brought up as the example. That's interesting. Mm-hmm. Did you hear that?
Did you hear it on the show? No, I wasn't here to hear that.
Okay, so the question was, and it was a spinach question. Mm-hmm. Organic spinach versus just spinach you buy. Mm-hmm. You know, is it worth paying a little bit higher price for the organic spinach as opposed to the spinach that is not organic?
I'm always going to say yes. But the reason I'm going to say yes is because I know the damage that glyphosate's going to produce. And I know the damage that not getting the minerals is going to produce.
But
so I'm going to spend more money.
But are we for sure that spinach had glyphosate put around it or on it? For, you know, I mean, I don't know. I mean,
you mean if it's labeled organic, can you be sure there's not glyphosate on it?
That, or, that's a good one, or... Is it worth the upgrade in price? And I don't know. You would know better about this than I would as far as the price as organic spinach as opposed to regular spinach at the grocery store. But, you know, certified organic as opposed to regular spinach. Is it worth it as we grocery shop and everybody's on a budget and they look at this and go, I don't know, you know.
Is it worth it to eat food that doesn't have chemical, pesticide, antibiotic, and no minerals versus eat food that has no chemicals and has some minerals in it? Absolutely.
Okay.
It would be worth it.
So it's worth it.
I couldn't get there mentally myself. I mean, we changed our food budget. The average American spends 5% of their income on food now, where it used to be 15%. So we've increased our food budget because I know it's worth it. I know long term, my deductibles, I'm not going to have to be spending money on deductibles and pharmaceuticals and co-pays and doctor visits and hospitalizations and nursing homes and blah, 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 go on and on and on. So that long term gain. You know, probably Mike Ivey would talk about that too. When you invest in something, you're not going to uninvest in it because it didn't gain you a whole bunch in a week or 2 weeks or a month. You're in it for the long haul. And the same way when you invest in your health, you're in it for the long haul. You've got to understand that these degenerative chronic diseases, Alzheimer's, coronary disease, heart attack, stroke, cancers, autoimmune, all the things that people, diabetes, I mean, all of it, that you slowly degenerate over the last 30 years of your life and you spend so much money on copays and your Medicare Part B and blah, blah, blah. That's when you're going to get your return on investment. You're going to have a quality of life.
So pay me now or pay me later.
Exactly.
Wait, look at
exactly
how much
right.
Our kids rarely go to the doctor.
No, I know.
We don't even have a pediatrician.
But you've got to connect the dots between that this really matters, that the food that goes in your mouth really does matter. Does it really affect your Alzheimer's, your coronary disease, your cancer, everything else? Is there really that correlation? And if someone gets convinced that, yeah, there is a correlation, then it's easy.
But is there scientific proof that it does? And that's where that's where people start going, well, you can say that all you want, but is there some documentation that proves beyond a shadow of a doubt that that is indeed what's killing? I believe it does. Okay.
Part of this has to be.
There's a lot of naysayers out there.
Part of this has to be common sense. But then, yes, there is the science to back it up, too. You've got to look at the whole of the science, too, because here's what we're looking for. The general public, even doctors, look for a study that points to this smoking gun. You know, show me the study that has 100 people eating Roundup every day, and it's a direct correlation to X, Y, and Z disease. There's not this one-to-one correlation so much as it's the whole body, the multiple toxins, the multiple deficiencies. You've got to put it all together. It's not a one single...
So is it anecdotal? Would you say it's anecdotal? Or
no. I mean, you look at these graphs. These are correlation. Correlation doesn't equal causation, and I would encourage people to look this up since this is radio and you can't see it. But this is from the USDA and the CDC. Probably if you just type in chronic disease and rates and glyphosate administration. But there's a, I mean, I'll turn my computer around and show you, Wade, but there's this direct correlation. This is a graph that shows acute renal failure death. We're going back to 1981, and we're progressing to the year 2009. And what it shows is this bar graph of increasing numbers of acute renal failure death. And the increase really started picking up about 1997, when there were only 1.5 deaths per 100,000 in 1997. Now go up to 2010, you're at 2.77 per. But when you see the graph, it's when you overlay Roundup and GMO, that's the blue and red lines. You overlay on that on the disease incidence, the correlation on the rise, they fit almost perfectly. But there's, you can go through every disease from IBS to Alzheimer's to cancer to autism. I mean, all these lines correlate.
Wow.
Now, correlation does not equal causation, but when you see that...
there's something there.
When you look back to 1900, when there's very little disease besides, you know, people were dying from pneumonia and TB and stuff, but cancer, I mean, it was 1 out of 30, 1 out of 35, something, you know, around that in 1900. Heart attack and stroke, atherosclerosis, the hardening of the arteries and the blockages in the arteries. You can rarely even find that on an autopsy report in 1900. So what is it that happened in the past 100 years, especially when you graph these things out in 1950s, but really the late 80s and mid-90s, you just see this exponential rise. You got to realize it's not genetics. I mean, there's no way that can be genetics. Our genes don't mutate that quickly.
Mm-hmm.
So then you look at the studies that show 90 to 95% of all cancer is not genetic. It's diet and lifestyle and environmental.
Hey,
95% of cancer.
Website, it's called businessinsider.com, and it compares organic versus non-organic prices. This person was at Whole Foods, but they were saying regular strawberries $3.99 per pound, organic is $4.49 per pound. So it says buying a pound of organic strawberries each week would cost you about $26 more than buying non-organic over the cost of the year. Bananas, regular 79 cents, organic bananas 89 cents. Peaches 3.49 for regular, organic 3.99. I mean, you just got to be smart. You can't just walk in the grocery store and just grab anything. You got to research and
You've got to discipline yourself from a budgetary standpoint, and you've got to make some decisions. Am I going to spend more for that extra upgrade on my iPhone or buy a few more cups of coffee at Starbucks? It costs $5 a cup. You know, it's this thing about priorities.
Yeah.
And we got to reprioritize our life, you know.
Yeah.
And right. Then there's part of it is grow your own food. That's what I'm really trying to encourage. The reason we've done so much ag stuff the last, you know, few weeks. I mean, where I work at Veritas, we're housed by VTS, a huge manufacturing company, and they have an extra acre on their property where they've turned it into a garden. And once that thing is fully functional and producing what it's capable of producing, I mean, an acre of garden can feed, you know, dozens and dozens of families, then my food bills are going to go way down. So when you get local production, either out of your own garden or your own windowsill, your own back porch or patio, and that's what Veritas Gardens is being developed to do.
But that's a narrow window of time, because I talked about an hour earlier in the show about, we also, isn't it true, as consumers of food, have to realize that, hey, if I want strawberries, and I use this analogy, if I want strawberries on my, you know, my pie or whatever, or strawberries with Christmas and my Thanksgiving or Christmas turkey,
mm-hmm.
you're going to be getting strawberries from Mexico where
right.
they have no regulation at all.
Right.
And that, and God knows what has been put on those strawberries.
Yep.
It could be DDT, glyphosate. It could be all kinds of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But so we have to understand that there's certain food types that you cannot have at certain times of the year, because we
yep.
can't grow it here because there's a blizzard warning in effect for next weekend kind
yeah.
of stuff.
Yeah. Well, and that shifts to the idea of, we've got to realize that this 24/7, 365, any way I want it, right now kind of thought in our food is wrong. No culture in the world, in the history of the world, has ever been able to eat strawberries all year long, every single day of the year if they wanted to. Or any other food. I mean, there's this thing called seasonal eating and local eating.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you can grow it in your town in whatever season you're in, that's the food you should be eating. Now, that's a pretty strict and narrow diet compared to what we're used to with the standard
right.
American diet.
Right.
But the standard American diet's what's killing everybody. So it's about time we take a look at that. And I'm not saying everybody can only eat what they grow out of their backyard. But when you combine, you know, a local type of eating thought process with, and this is going to sound crazy to some people, fasting. I mean, you skip one meal a day, how much money did you save that you can turn around and spend it on grass-fed beef? And this fasting thing is huge from a health standpoint. And again, every culture up until ours has always fasted because either a religious reason or that they just had to because they didn't have food. I mean, I was watching a National Geographic show this weekend with the kids, and these African guys were hunting some kind of, you know, antelope of some sort on foot with bows and arrows. They peeled one off, and this one animal was running, and they started hoofing it. I mean, they start running this thing, and I was like, man, no wonder those marathon runners.
Can you imagine average American trying to follow those guys?
So they're chasing this thing, chasing. If they don't get it, they're not eating. And that's how people, whether it was a famine or the game wasn't there or whatever, the locust came in and wiped out the crop. There's a period where people just did not eat. And it really ancient cultures like the Greeks and the Romans, you look at them and they ate a huge, you know, they had a feast at night, but they didn't really eat breakfast and they didn't really eat much of a lunch. They started snacking about early to mid-afternoon and then worked up this huge five-course meal at night. So they had 18 hours in their day of not eating. That's called intermittent fasting. But what the studies are showing is this fasting thing, whether it be intermittent, where you skip breakfast only, or block fasting. That's where you go, you know, 2 days, 3 days, a week. The world record, I may get this off by a few numbers, but 386 days.
What?
Give or take. It was a guy that weighed 400 pounds. He went 386 days without eating.
What?
He drank water.
What the heck?
If you've got a pantry full in your body.
Did you see what he did?
Pantry full. No, I'm not looking at anybody in particular.
What? I'm so glad you didn't point to me.
What? Yeah.
This guy had 400 pounds of pantry on him. Your body can burn fat for fuel. And in fact, when it burns fat for fuel, it's a cleaner burning fuel. It produces ketones. The brain uses ketones as fuel. And brain clarity, mental clarity and sharpness and energy and satiety and mood and growth. Growth hormone goes up 2,000% in men, 1,300% in women, just with an intermittent fast after 18 hours of fast. And growth hormone is more aptly, should be called the repair hormone. That's what repairs you every day.
Well, I have to say, doctor, that back in 1997, I had double pneumonia, and I was overseas in Bosnia, and I got sick, and so I didn't feel like eating, but I almost died there because double pneumonia, and I just kept going on with a mission every day, and I was coughing and hacking. Anyway, long story short, they admitted me to this Italian field hospital where nobody spoke English in there, and I didn't know what was going on, and they kept bringing me food, and I was hooked up on IV antibiotics, and they kept saying, here's some octopus to eat tonight and all that. I was like, octopus? I mean, you know, I just didn't feel like eating. And so because of my illness, I fasted for 10 days.
Yeah.
Now, again, I was taking in fluids. Mm-hmm. But after 10 days, you would be amazed. I'll never forget, after 10 days of not eating anything except taking in liquids, either IV or by mouth, I had lost almost 20 pounds in 10 days.
Yeah.
It was an amazing. And so when I finally started, you want some octopus today? Oh, I'll try a little bit, and I'll, you know, here and there. But it was amazing the feeling I had of, you know, for the weeks after, and not recognizing that this is 20 years ago, but realizing, man, that was a really good thing to do.
Yeah.
Well, but not many people can do that. Just, okay, I'm just not going to eat for a week.
Well, there's a huge psychological thing to overcome, especially in our culture where food's widely available all day, every day. But it's fascinating to me that after all these years and all this science and all these gazillion dollars spent and all this research on weight loss and whatever, it boils down to what my six-year-old would tell you. You know, how do you get someone to lose weight? Don't let them eat. Just stop eating. It's not, you know, it's not rocket science. But the beautiful thing is science does show, I mean, like the growth hormone.
But don't you run the risk, though, if, you know, again, because I remember after my 10-day fast, if you will, that once my appetite came back, I realized my body then started saying, okay, we went through a starvation period, so everything you eat now, we're going to store as fat and really put the weight back on you. You have to be careful with that.
Exactly. If you think back to, you know, generations ago when it was a famine and then it was a feast, and they would put on 10 or 20 pounds because they knew another famine was coming. So it was this cycle, famine, feast, back and forth. The problem is you probably went back to feast mode after that and stayed in it because food is readily available, mm-hmm. and we eat at least.
I gained all the weight back before I got back to Lubbock.
Yeah. So that's why we use what's called block fasting. So you go 3 days or a week or whatever. There's no rule to it, and you just don't eat. You drink water or broth. I'm talking bone broth, homemade, hopefully. They showed a study with coffee, a cup in the morning with some fat in it, and then water throughout the day. So you're getting your hydration. But that's block fasting, 3 days, 4 days, 7 days, whatever. But then you eat. But then you're going to fast again, and you go back and forth, back and forth. And again, there's no rule to it. Dr. Pompa likes to tell his patients, do the 5-1-1 or the 3-2-2. What that is 5 days, then 1 day, then 1 day. So 5 days of intermittent fasting, which is skip breakfast, start eating about 1 in the afternoon, and finish your eating about 6 p.m., but get your calories in. Now, this is where people get off. Because of Weight Watchers and all these other restrict your calories, and it's all about calories in, calories out. You got to burn more out than you put in. All that's hogwash, and the science has proven that. So they limit their calories. You can't do that. In that 1 p.m. to 6 p.m. window, and it doesn't have to be exactly 1 to 6, but 4, 5, 6 hours, however you want to construct that, is when you eat. But you've got to get your 1,500, 2,000 calories in. So you got to eat. You got to feast. But then after supper's done at 6:30 or 7, you're done. And you sleep all night, and all the next morning you don't eat breakfast, and you keep going until 1 o'clock. That's an intermittent fast, about an 18-hour fast. And you do that every day for 5 days. So that's the 5. And then on the 1 and the 1, so you do 1 day. After those 5 days of intermittent fasting, then you do 1 day of 24-hour fast. You skip breakfast, lunch, and supper. But then you follow that 1 day with a feast. You eat breakfast, lunch, and supper and plenty of snacks, and you kind of overdo it. Now it's good. It's healthy food. It's high fat, moderate protein, low carb.
It's not bean burritos and stuff.
No. Well, if you had, you know, the right tortillas, you had the ancient
right
grain
beans.
Tortillas and some black beans. And I mean, we make burritos at our house all the time, but we use real food that hopefully doesn't have glyphosate or any other chemical on it. But even the on that 1 day that's feast, I even jack up the carbs a little bit to a moderate carb from a low carb. But sweet potatoes, your root vegetables,
and that doesn't
parsnips
wreck your
and carrots. No, what wrecks your metabolism is calorie restriction, consistent calorie restriction, meaning you eat a 500-calorie or 800-calorie, you're cutting your portion sizes, you're counting your points, and you have this restricted caloric intake consistently every day. Studies show your metabolism actually shuts down. So the first month or two or three, you're going to lose your 10 pounds, but then it stops, you stop losing, then you slowly start gaining because your metabolic rate may have been coming into this 1800, you're burning 1800 calories a day. Now you may have been eating 2000 calories a day, so there's that 2000 extra that you're storing. So then you go on Weight Watchers or you cut your portions in half or whatever. I used to tell my patients in post, get a paper plate and don't overfill those little, you know, slots on your paper plate. That's how you restrict your calories.
Hey, what about working out on those days?
Yeah, we'll get to that. I want to finish this good point because I don't want people to misunderstand. You cannot restrict your calories. When you only eat 1,000 calories, back to what I was saying, 1,500 calories maybe was your metabolic rate. So you go into calorie restriction, you only eat 1,200 calories. You're cutting your portions, counting calories. So you're down to 1,200. You'll lose weight for a month or two. But then your metabolic rate, your metabolism slows down to like 900 calories a day it'll burn. So even though you're only eating 1,000 calories or 1,200 calories, you're meeting your limits on your Weight Watchers or whatever, your metabolism just slowed down so much you can't even burn that anymore. That's what calorie restriction does. It shuts the metabolism down. So do not calorie restrict long term. It might work for a month or two or three, but long term it doesn't work. Everybody gains the weight back. Now, when you get your calories in, but just you get them into a little window, 4, 5, 6 hours, you know, that's fine. It's at 18 hours of a fast or going longer, 3, 4, 5, 6 days of fast. That's what's beautiful. Growth hormone goes up 2,000% in a man, 1,300 in a woman. All the anabolic hormones, testosterone goes up. Anabolic hormones grow muscle and tissue and repair stuff. And those all go up when you're fasting. Leaky gut, tight junctions in the gut close with fasting. So when to exercise? I want to stress that exercise is not a great way to lose weight, and I never recommend it for weight loss. Exercise is great for lots of things, and if you could bottle the exercise into a pill, the health benefits of exercise are probably bigger than any single thing you could do as a human being. The health benefits are just tremendous. And if you could put all those benefits into a pill, it would be a blockbuster, multi-trillion-dollar pill. Everyone would be on it. But you can't. You got to actually get up and move and do it. So it's great for health benefits. It's great for fitness. It's great to decrease Alzheimer's and cancer and coronary disease and autoimmune disease and everything under the sun. But it's not great for weight loss.
But you can't, like the old saying goes, you can't outwork out a poor diet.
That's correct.
You can't, you know, like me, I exercise religiously 4 times a week for 45 minutes at a time with strength training and cardio bursting.
Right.
I'm into the bursting now where you do the 30-second burst and walk a minute and a half and 30-second burst. But anyway, but I haven't really lost a lot of weight with that.
Because
my diet is just so...
It's a hormone issue. Weight gain's a hormone issue, and the intermittent fasting affects hormones so much, and the food affects your hormones, insulin in particular. So that's why just working out doesn't work. So if you're working out 45 minutes every day, but then you're eating a meal that's full of glyphosate, and glyphosate's jacking your gut membrane, your tight junctions get blown wide open by the glyphosate. It kills the gut bacteria, and there's gut bacteria that interact with your metabolic rate, that interact with ghrelin and leptin. These are hormones that tell you you're full, quit eating, or to burn fat instead of store it. Those hormones get totally disrupted by the glyphosate. So you go home and you eat a meal full of glyphosate and you're just screwing up all the biochemical pathways that regulate your metabolism. So that's why it doesn't
work. So that's why people get frustrated when they, because all the New Year's resolutions are right around the corner.
Yeah.
People get, oh, I'm going to go to the gym and I'm going to work out. I'm going to get back in shape.
Yeah.
But they forget about the diet aspect of it.
Right.
But they just think if I start exercising that my body, my metabolism burn rate will turn on and I can still eat like a pig and make it.
No. Yeah, it doesn't work. It's way more complicated than that. Now, exercise, the time to exercise during a fasting kind of lifestyle is when you're breaking your fast. At the end of that fast, before you eat, is the best time to exercise. It causes a tremendous boost in your testosterone and the other anabolic hormones. So you're going to grow and repair tissue, grow muscle. There's these bodybuilders that basically they intermittent fast and eat a ketogenic diet. Ketogenic is a high-fat diet. And they just put the weight right on. There's this 18-year-old kid. He was eating clean, low-carb, moderate protein, high-fat, kind of a ketogenic type of diet. And he was working out hard. And he just couldn't budge. He couldn't get above that 165. He couldn't put muscle on. So all he did over the summer, for 3 months, he added intermittent fasting. So that same healthy eating, he just crunched it into a five-hour window. He put 35 pounds of muscle on in 3 months. I mean, this kid just bulked right up.
From intermittent fasting.
Okay. Yeah, from the intermittent fasting.
Well, I think that's...
And I have another question after the call.
Okay. Let's go to the phones. Good morning. Welcome to the show.
Hello. My experience has been over quite a few years of different kinds of exercise, and I'm up in years now, and my blood pressure has kind of become a problem, and I've noticed that I could do aerobics, and my blood pressure wouldn't change that much. It wouldn't go down that much. But when I lifted weights and started increasing the program, getting more and more with it, that's when I witnessed a much lower, a drastic decrease in my blood pressure.
Yeah, me too. Strength training really helped me too because I was borderline.
Oh, did you find that too?
Hypertension, yeah. And, I was doing those little pressure cuffs at the grocery store. And it was high, and I started, well, maybe I ought to increase my strength training and, kind of aerobic strength training, not just lift a weight and wait 3 minutes and go lift another one. No, I mean, where you're actively doing it. And my blood pressure stabilized. Totally, yeah, kind of a circuit training type thing. And I'm overweight, make no mistake about it. I'm about 35 pounds, 40 pounds maybe overweight. But blood pressure, everything like that, triglycerides are a little bit out of whack, but not crazy, but... And Dr. Edwards has seen my results there. But I will tell you that the exercise right now is a Band-Aid approach to where I'm at now. And my New Year's resolution, I hate doing resolutions, but it will be to clean up the diet and because my exercise is good. But that did stabilize my blood pressure, but I'll let the doctor answer the question.
Yeah, I don't know. I haven't read any studies, or I don't know if there are any out there. Haven't looked, so I will, on the effects of weight training on blood pressure versus aerobic training. You know, just thinking about it, obviously what you're doing with weight training, you're building that muscle, you're stressing the muscles more, and you're going to get more muscle growth, the muscle cells, just to be alive, that muscle cell
has...
Which
you create that thing they call, the Valsalva maneuver.
Valsalva maneuver, yeah.
Yeah, where you hold your breath and tense.
Right.
These things bloom out, and then they come back. That's what you're trying to do, to expand the vessels.
Right.
Get more blood flow, less restriction.
Yeah, Valsalva is, folks at home, if you can think about just straining, bearing down, like you're about to lift a real heavy box and you're straining or bearing down. That's Valsalva. What that does is flip your parasympathetic nervous system on instead of your sympathetic. Sympathetic will tend to tighten those arteries and vessels up and get the pressure up. Parasympathetic will tend to relax all those vessels. So that's what's happening there. Same, people get into this real high heart rate called supraventricular tachycardia, or SVT. And if you do a Valsalva on those patients, it'll flip them to parasympathetic, and it can drop that heart rate substantially. So that's part of the potential mechanism for why the blood pressure goes down. But then as you're just, you know, building, you're asking your muscles to do more, and, you know, there's going to be some hormonal connection, I would imagine, between muscle growth and muscle strain and stress and the vascular system. But back to what I recommend for patients on exercise is this burst training, kind of like what Wade was talking about. When you do your cardio or you do your weightlifting, you do it in a rapid, quick pace, and you go one to another to another. You know, a 30-second break or so, but kind of back and forth. Take a small break, but then hit it hard, but do get your heart rate up, even when you're lifting the weights.
Yeah.
So that's
yeah.
the burst training, where you go, you know, 90 seconds go hardcore and then 30-second break or vice versa. Some kind of intermittent training, and just for 10 or 15 minutes, even 20 minutes tops would be fine, but doing it when you're breaking the fast.
But be careful on those, like those programs out there that you see, and you're going to see a lot of advertisements on it coming up right now, if not today, you know, the P90X and stuff like that. That's really not that good for people over the age of 40. Because that's really, you know, you start getting into
really?
Injuring joints, and you don't, you know, people
what
over.
What is that you're talking about? Well, I'm not familiar.
Well, it's kind of like the aerobic, you know, they're just jumping around going crazy for like 35, 40 minutes solid and doing a lot of which are good exercises, but they don't use a whole lot of weights there. They use a lot of moving your own body weight around, which is really the best way to exercise as opposed to weights, but you don't do it in such that kind of rapid manner, especially if you've been a couch potato, and especially if you're over the age of 40,
hey,
because you're going to tear yourself up.
Another good form of exercise is rebounding. That's what I've just recently started doing,
because
you get a lot of cellular benefit from that, and that's good for older people with their joints too.
Yeah, that's easy to do, and that's good for
that's
them.
That's just the little trampoline.
Yeah.
The little trampoline that you can put in your bedroom and just bounce up and down on
you
it.
You can even buy those at Target.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Or even just the action of jumping a rope. You can even do it without the rope. Just go through that motion of jumping kind of up and down gently.
Yeah, that's been proven to be good to kind of knock out a lot of the nasty toxins and stuff in your lymph system and lymphatic system, and cleaning it out by natural detox is the rebounding thing. And I tell you what, I did that the other day because I have not been doing that. And, boy, after 20 minutes of doing that, I thought that was a joke when I saw my wife doing it. I thought, that is so easy. I mean, it's – so I get on there and I do it for 20 minutes and I'm dizzy. I
well,
get off and I'm
easy,
like,
well,
oh.
It can be easy or it can be hard depending on how you do it.
Right, but it totally wore me out. And I thought, man, why would that be? But nevertheless, that was – I appreciate the caller, but
I got one more thing.
Yeah, go ahead.
What is your thoughts on this CrossFit training?
CrossFit is kind of like what we're talking about here with the P90. It's using body movements and body weight and what's called functional movement. So, you know, if you think about it, every time you sit down on the toilet or sit down in a chair, you're basically, you're doing a squat. Every time you bend over to the floor and, or in your refrigerator and pick up a gallon of milk, you know, you're doing kind of a deadlift, or you're picking the groceries up off the ground, you're doing a deadlift. So there's these functional movements we do every day, from getting out of bed to getting on the toilet to grabbing something off the ground to bend over and put on your shoes. These are called functional movements. Mm-hmm. It's what ends up putting people in a nursing home is when they cannot do a functional movement anymore. So CrossFit originally was designed to basically support these functional movements using your own body weight and do it in a rapid, you know, 12 to 15 minute long exercise where you do, you know, something for 30 seconds and then you do another movement for 45 seconds, another movement for 30 seconds, and you go through these multiple different functional movements and you're done in 10 or 12 or 15 minutes. And it's designed for everybody from a kid to a grandma to be able to do it. Now, there's some extremism in some of the CrossFit gyms and what you'll see on like TV on ESPN, the national games. That's the real elite, you know, that 1% group that's super elite have taken it to a far extreme. But that's not your average Joe. You know, that's not what it was originally intended to do.
So I
like CrossFit, but not the extreme CrossFit.
Yeah.
Yeah, that works at a lower level where you're not doing all that crazy.
Exactly.
Yeah, and again, if you're
200-pound snatches and carrying, you know,
you're not going to. If you're over the age of 40, and especially a couch potato, and over the age of 40, that is a bad. That's a recipe for going to see the knee and hip and shoulder replacement guy.
Yeah.
That's not a good idea. So, but yeah, just, you know, again, take it easy out there. But I think CrossFit is a good way. But you can incorporate CrossFit into your, like I do into my workout, throwing away 30. I throw up, you know, 35-pound dumbbells now. And in a year ago, I would have thought, there's no way I can lift these things. But I lift them now like they're no big deal. In fact, I got to increase my repetitions on each one because your body will stabilize. Mm-hmm. And you got to continue to realize that, and you can't just use the same stuff over and over and over month after month after month. You plateau. You got to continue to move upward a little bit.
Yeah,
5 pounds each one.
The body likes variation, and the same thing with that fasting.
Thanks for the call. Good call.
Back to the fasting. If you just go to the intermittent fast where you skip breakfast every day and eat a good dinner and a medium lunch, get all your calories in. But if you did that every single day, there's some patients that will plateau at that.
Mm-hmm.
They'll still feel good and everything will be pretty, they'll be way better than they were, but there might be 10 extra pounds they just can't lose, or a little bit of brain fog that just tends to creep back up every now and then, or inflammatory process of some sort. So variation, we call it diet variation. So that's where you go back to the 5-1-1 or the 3-2-2. So you do your 18-hour intermittent fast for 3 or 4 or 5 days, but then you do a whole day fast for a day or two, then you do a feast day for a day or two, and you know, you go back and forth. You vary it.
Always keep your body guessing.
Okay, for those people like me who are sugar burners, how do you get past the horrible brain fog and being spaced out? And
one of the best ways for someone like Melody, who's already eating pretty clean, has been working on, you know, sugar grain free for a while, I would say get some exogenous ketones.
Exogenous
like
ketones?
MCT oil, or there's one, Quest.
MCT oil? Is that what you said?
Medium chain triglyceride.
Okay.
Or there's a powder called Quest. Just Google Quest ketone powder. But there's various products out there. I'm sure Natural Health Market has some good ones. But basically, that's an outside source of ketones that you start to fuel your body with while you're doing these intermittent fasts, and it'll get you that to the ketosis quicker and get you that brain fog relief quicker than just trying to get there nutritionally. Now, someone who's not where you're at, you know, someone on standard American diet, here's basically the spectrum or the timeline kind of I would put someone on. You're coming in standard American, so you're eating a lot of grain, a lot of sugar, a lot of chemical, very little nutrient in your food, and you're probably grazing all day long. You're eating breakfast, you're eating a mid-morning snack, you're eating lunch and a mid-afternoon snack and some drinks here and there, and then a midnight snack. And you're
talking about me.
And no, I'm not looking at anybody in particular, just your standard American, Wade, standard American.
Sad.
So first, from there, just try to get to 3 meals a day. Cut out the in-between snacking and the midnight snack. Just get to 3 meals a day. And while you're getting to 3 meals a day, try to focus on a little more healthy fat, getting fat at every meal, and keeping it more fat and protein type of meal and a little less carb. So that's the first step. So then the second stage, once you feel like you're pretty good there, is get more strict in that. Get to no grain, no sugar at all. So where you're just and focus on high fat, moderate protein, low carb. You know, it may take someone 6 months just to phase off standard American, getting to 3 meals a day only. But if you think you're going to be hungry in between those meals, and you're not eating enough fat, and you're still on your insulin roller coaster from eating too much carb. So bring the carbs down, bring the fats up, get to 3 meals a day. And then once you're there, get more strict on no grain, no sugar, spend some time there for a while. But then it's time to move into more of a ketogenic state where you're focused, you get the app or whatever it takes to get your diet more like 70 to 80% fat, moderate protein, low carb, and be there for 2 or 3 months. And what that does is flip a person from sugar burn metabolism to fat burn metabolism. When you restrict your carb and sugars very, very strictly, like less than 50 grams a day of carb, or less than 35 would be even more strict, but you eat a lot of fat, then you force your cells to burn fat for fuel.
Is this it, the ketogenic diet app? Is that it?
I don't know. I'm sure if that's...
It's free.
Yeah, I'm sure it's good. But basically, you want to find an app where you can put in what food you ate, and it'll tell you the percent of fat, protein, carb, and you can... And there's books, there's cookbooks on keto. Jimmy Moore has a great website on keto. But basically, you want to get shifted into that fat burn. You want to force your body to start burning fat.
Is that any different from paleo diet, or is that
paleo's tends? Those guys tend to go higher protein. Yeah, and you got to be careful because the protein, too much protein turns into sugar, glucose, and that will keep you in this state where you're still burning sugar for fuel. You can still be insulin resistant, so you got to be careful there.
Okay.
But once you're keto, once you're eating a lot of fat, moderate protein, low carb, then you throw in your fast. And that's when you really see the magic. That's when you really start to see the hormone sensitivity come, the growth hormone and testosterone go up, the insulin sensitivity gets very, very crisp, and you just see all these health benefits start to come with the intermittent fasting. Now, you could intermittent fast right out of the box if you wanted to, but a standard American is so sugar and carb addicted, your blood sugar is going to drop, you're not fat adapted, your body doesn't know how to use the fat for fuel very efficiently. So I really recommend transitioning into that. Those exogenous ketones I'm talking about, the Quest or the MCT mm-hmm. oil, even your fish oils, coconut oil, that will help you. If you're supplementing with those things, it'll help bridge that gap when you're trying to move into that ketogenic state.
How many milligrams of the fish oil do you think?
At least 2 grams or 2,000 milligrams.
No, that's like a can of sardines.
Yeah.
Huh. I mean, those are good. I just like eating good sardines.
Yeah, sardines, anchovies, mackerel, yeah. Mm-hmm. The small fish in particular, the fatty fish.
Yeah.
And that's how you get the ketogenic. You get the good fat without a ton of protein. You get the fattier fish, not the leaner fish. You get the fattier cuts of beef and as opposed to the leaner. Then you'll be getting your fat.
Organic beef.
You throw an egg and an avocado and coconut oil all together on your eggs in the morning instead of just an egg. You throw a dollop of whole sour cream on there. You're putting whole cream into your bulletproof coffee, or you're putting grass-fed butter and coconut oil into your coffee to make bulletproof. That's how you get the extra fat in there. You're just adding fat to every meal.
Grapeseed oil?
It's kind of second tier. It's definitely better than your canola, Crisco, vegetable oil, corn oil, soy oil.
What about avocado oil?
Top tier. Avocado oil, coconut oil, real butter, lard, especially from pasture-raised pig.
Salad dressing, and I usually either use the avocado oil or the grapeseed oil. Olive oil just has too strong of a flavor for me to put on.
Yeah, I would go avocado oil. It's better than the grapeseed. You can make your own mayo with avocado oil, too. It's real easy to do. You can look that up online, how to do that. Or Natural Grocers carries an avocado mayo.
They do. It's good, too.
You got to be careful with mayo. I mean, even the organic olive oil mayos, you look at the first ingredient, is still canola oil. Yeah, there's olive oil in it, but it's not the main ingredient. But Primal Palate, I think, is the brand name. I know it's Primal something or maybe Paleo. But anyways, it's only avocado mayo that's at Natural Grocers.
Emma found one at... Market Street. She's so funny. I'm like super picky about mayonnaise, and the girls always want to get it. And she Man, she's 12.
Yeah.
And she was reading the label. She came home and she was so excited. Mom, look, I found this mayonnaise, and it doesn't have any soy in it, and it doesn't have any canola in it.
Yeah.
I was like, yes.
Well, back to the beginning of the show, Wade, you asked about minerals, and could that really be, could everybody be demineralized? Yes, everyone is demineralized. And if I could pick two things for every patient to do, would be remineralize aggressively and then detoxify aggressively. Glyphosate blocks your natural detox pathways in your liver.
But won't you detoxify when you... Okay, let me stop you right there and ask this question. I know we're running short on time. But when you fast, aren't you detoxing?
Yes, you are.
Okay.
Absolutely.
I want to make that clear.
You're fasting. I mean, you're detoxing all the time. Your body naturally... I mean, you make byproducts just like in your vehicle. You turn that key on and you start your metabolism, your engine combustion. You're making byproducts of combustion that have got to go out your tailpipe. So all day, you're making toxins just from being alive and your metabolism running. But the body's designed and equipped to handle those toxicities. They're called free radicals. The body has antioxidants like glutathione that quench those free radicals and then dispose of these toxins. So the body's all day, every day doing that. It does it more at night when you're asleep. A lot of these detox pathways rev up and the enzymes rev up during sleep, which is why part of the reason why we need good sleep. So yeah, you're detoxing all the time. The problem is you get overwhelmed. These detox pathways get overwhelmed. It's like you need maybe a 10-inch diameter tailpipe to take care of all your exhaust, and you only have a 1-inch diameter, and it's just getting backed up in the system, and your air filter is going to get clogged, and you're just not detoxifying well because you're overwhelmed with toxicity from the environment. That's why 95% of cancer is environmental and lifestyle related. 80% of heart attacks is environmental and lifestyle related. And that's the studies that go back to prove why you need to eat the clean food. It all starts to make sense when you put it all together. Why is America the worst in health outcomes? Croatia beats us with health outcomes.
Wow.
They're 47th. I think we're 48th. They're right above us in health outcomes.
There's a lot of chain smokers in Croatia.
They don't even have a health infrastructure. You know, and there's studies that show the more you go to specialists, cardiologists, endocrinologists, nephrologists, neurologists, the worse your health outcomes are. The more we dabble with you with Western modern medicine, the worse your health outcomes are. But it's because we're putting more toxins into you. We're putting these pharmaceuticals in that aren't treating the root cause. They're treating a symptom. And if you don't treat the root cause, the problem's still there, and it's still going to get you. You're just masking a symptom.
Yeah, it's like I have a friend whose daughter is in high school. She has horrible anxiety.
Yeah.
She's on all these anxiety meds.
Glyphosate prevents the absorption of the essential amino acids that create your serotonin. Serotonin is your mood stabilizer. So all this anxiety, depression, mood disorder, everyone's getting on Zoloft for. Zoloft's your serotonin pill. Well, part of that's because glyphosate's blocking the amino acids to make your serotonin. It's all connected. It's all connected to the gut, the nutrients that we're not getting in because of the toxins. But glyphosate blocks the detox pathways, two particular detox pathways in your liver. Your liver's your main detox organ. It's like your air filter. But if your pathways are blocked by glyphosate, then all the other toxins get exponentially more damaging to you because you were able to detox those toxins.
How did you say that glyphosate blocks what? The
two different cytochrome P450 and one other cytochrome.
Amino acids.
These are enzymes. Glyphosate blocks the absorption of some of the essential amino acids, the aromatic amino acids, which is what builds your serotonin, those amino acids. But glyphosate also blocks two key enzymes in your liver that help detoxify the toxins that we're all exposed to. So that is such a huge toxin because of the effects it has on the body's ability to do everything. So,
okay, so if my friend gets her daughter off the anxiety drugs, how would you do that? Gotta do it slow,
I always wean the anxiety drugs, but I would never, you know, give a certain protocol for anyone without seeing them as a patient of mine. But in general, if, you know, you could say if you're on 50 milligrams of Zoloft every day and you've been on it for a year, you'd want to go slowly, like 50, then 25, and then 50, 25, and alternate every day, you know, for a few weeks, see how they did. And then you bump it down to 25 milligrams a day every day for a while, then maybe 25 and 12.5 alternating every day for a couple weeks. It's just a slow wean. There's no real science to it. You kind of have to, every patient's individual, and you sort of see how they're responding to the wean.
Okay.
But you're doing that in conjunction with the fact that you're totally cleaning up the diet. And you're, you're getting off the Glofosinate.
We're not even talking about weaning meds until the gut's healthy, your probiotics are back, and you're building your own serotonin.
Right.
Fix the problem, then you don't need the meds anymore.
That's right, right.
Fix the hole in the tire, then you don't have to keep going back and filling up with air every week like I was doing with my wife's tire that was leaky. Fix the problem.
No kidding.
So get the serotonin, get the amino acids back to get your own serotonin back, and then your brain is good. You don't need the Zoloft. You wean right off.
Man, and that Zoloft is dangerous stuff. Dr. Edwards, we appreciate it. Once again, boy, we could do another full hour with you on this stuff. This is amazing.
I think it's fun.
Well, of course. I do, too. I think it's very informative. And, again, appreciate you being with us on the show today. Of course, we look forward to seeing you back next week right here on You're the Cure. Right here on AM 580. But again, if you'd like to reach out to us, VeritasMedical.com, all one word, VeritasMedical.com. Or again, feel free to give us a call, 8556-VERITAS, 8556-VERITAS. Dr. Edwards, we appreciate it. Look forward to seeing you next Monday right here on AM 580.
All right. Thank you, Wade.